Good evening, Strong Stance listeners. Thank you so much for joining us again tonight. I am your host, Eli Strong. And once again, we have an amazing topic for you tonight, and we have a couple of really great guests. And, you know, unlike the last couple of months where it's just been kind of one-on-one, me and one other guest, we're going to go back to the way that we used to do older shows. We've got a couple guests for you because I feel like they both have some great things to talk about. And so, you know, I think that one of the ways that this topic came about was that, as most of you know, I just recently moved from Washington, D.C. to the small town of Washington, Georgia. And, you know, I left a lot of my friends behind from the decade that I lived there, but even greater so, I left a lot of the trans community behind. And I didn't have a lot of trans resources and community down here. And it's no secret that living as trans can be a challenge. And that's particularly true in the small towns of the Deep South. There's a massive amount of evidence that successfully transitioning, however one might define that, is monumentally easier with access to resources and a healthy support system. And that also holds true after one has, quote unquote, completed their transition, also, however one might define that. It's also no surprise that considering the law of averages, that the smaller the town, the fewer the resources that are available. Throw in the degree to which a town is considered to be conservative or liberal, and a trans person may be left with little to no resources or community in a place where they're subject to ignorance, misunderstanding, discrimination, and even violence. But there are people out there changing those environments, and tonight we are going to talk to two such individuals. They're fighting to expand the rights of trans and gender variant people. They're changing what it means to be queer in the South and what resources are available to those in the community. They are transitioning the small town South. And the first of our guests tonight is M. Elliott, and M. is the field organizer for Georgia Equality, a political advocacy nonprofit that seeks to advance fairness, safety, and opportunity for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender Georgians. They serve as the programming coordinator and developer of the Campaign for Safe Schools, an initiative that focuses on supporting queer and trans students through GSA development and organizing, leadership development for students, and anti-bullying policies, training for teachers and staff, and an intersectional grassroots approach to dismantling the school-to-prison pipeline in Georgia. Born in West Virginia and raised in Cincinnati, Ohio, they are a Wittenberg University graduate with a BS in sociology and have been living and working in Georgia since 2010. M uses they, them, their pronouns. And M, I want to thank you for joining us tonight. How are you doing?
I'm doing just great. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, Em, you know, it's funny. Most of my guests I've known for a little bit, or I've at least met a couple of times, and we were actually virtually introduced today via a mutual friend. And I'm very glad that I got a chance to kind of dig into your world a little bit, and you know, kind of get a feel for what you're doing in Atlanta and with Georgia Equality, and maybe some things that you see on your roadmap, you know, kind of going forward in your life. And so I guess maybe the first thing I'd like to know is basically your personal connection to, like, why is it important to you to not only be out and actively queer in the South, but also, if you identify with the word queer, but also why it's so important for you to be doing this work where you are doing it in this arena?
Absolutely. So, I mean, the reason why I'm doing it here in the South is because, you know, I have a great connection with the South. I was born here. I have a lot of family from here. You know, I've spent a lot of time here and also working in areas outside of Atlanta. So definitely have a strong connection with the people. And doing the work here is so vitally necessary because we still are lacking a lot of the basic legal protections that are in place in many other states. So, for example, you can still be fired for being gay or transgender in Georgia. We still do not have any public accommodations protections. And as relating to this topic, there's no anti-bullying protection that's statewide that is inclusive of gender identity. Now, a big part of the work that I do is working to pass those exact policies on the local level, on the district level. We'll talk a little bit more about that. But I mean, the reason why I want to do the work here is because it's so vitally necessary. The rates of violence in schools in the South are a lot higher, and particularly for the LGBTQ community. And so, you know, when I was actually first brought on to do this work 4 years ago, I was brought on as a interfaith organizer. That was my original job title. But as soon as I came into my position, I realized, you know, just doing the coalition work and talking with the community and where the real problems were, it became very clear that schools were where we needed to focus. And that really resonated with me in my personal life as well, or in my past. I was not out in high school. I was not out in middle school. I didn't even have the words to understand my own identity. And so it definitely made it a lot more difficult. It didn't have the same resources that we have now, but at the same time, there's a lot more violence in the schools that we face today, as well as bias within the policies. The school-to-prison pipeline is a real phenomenon, and it's, you know, funneling our young people into the juvenile justice system with, you know, zero tolerance policies, teachers who may have biases, students who get students of color getting harsher infractions or harsher punishments for the same infractions, excuse me. And, you know, it also cuts across to LGBTQ students. And so the fact is we have students who are skipping school out of fear. We have students who are in school being harassed. We know this. We have done the surveys. We've talked to students. I have the anecdotal evidence. And so it's just a huge issue. And when I was brought on, that was glaringly obvious. And so that's really where I threw my weight into that arena and have been doing this work ever since. And it's been, yeah, very fruitful.
That's awesome. Well, so let's talk a little bit about, from a personal standpoint, kind of your connection and your identification, both within and maybe outside of the trans community. I mean, do you, you know, there are very many people that don't quite understand, obviously, that gay and trans are two different things, but you can be trans and gay, you can be trans and queer, you can be trans and straight. So I always like to know kind of a little bit about, particularly with folks doing this work, kind of what your connection and identification within the trans community is, as well as any of the other letters of the LGBTQ alphabet, as it were.
Certainly. Yeah, so I identify as genderqueer, though I don't quite like the academic label of that word. So I usually just stick with queer and definitely gender fluid, non-binary. I kind of use all these labels, androgynous. I'm very comfortable, you know, living between the binary or outside of it in that manner.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, you had mentioned something about that we now live in a time where there is more violence when it comes to schools, and there's more bullying. Mm-hmm. And I think that, I don't think that anybody that's been paying attention could necessarily deny that they hear about it more. And there's always the debate of, is it really higher, or are we just paying more attention to it, or is it that we know more about it because of social media and things like that? I personally believe that it probably is higher. And my question to you is, A, kind of, if you've done any kind of research or studies around that, is it actually higher, or is it just that we're paying attention to it more, that we're reporting it more? And also, have you been able to find any reasons as to why that is? Why is that number going up?
Well, it's a lot of reasons. There is research that shows that, you know, bullying is getting harsher, it's getting younger, and it's still being treated as this, you know, this idea that, you know, boys will be boys, or that it's some sort of rite of passage, or the adults in these young people's lives just remember back in their day, oh yeah, I had to go through that, it toughened me up. So, you know, that it's not seen as such a big issue. And I think that has been changing rapidly recently, just with the media attention around this issue, as well as with the very highly publicized suicides, which is a whole separate issue, which, you know, I have a problem with just the way that was, you know, the way the media talked about that issue. So, I mean, and that's a hard question because there's a lot of reasons. I mean, schools are being hugely underfunded. So not only are students struggling for resources and access to even get into school. I mean, just in Georgia, for example, 58% of students who attend school are low income. So we have, you know, over half of our students are, you know, lacking resources, and we are not having the same quality educated teachers who are able to recognize and intervene when bullying behavior is seen, because, you know, we're still dealing with that old mentality that, you know, this stuff just happens, or the teachers do not have the proper training in order to intervene effectively, because sometimes if they haven't, you know, ever encountered it, they may not think that, oh, that's so gay. They may not even hear that as bullying. Right. So a lot of it is going under the radar. Teachers are not stepping in. And when they do, it's not handled in a way that's restorative. This is the other big piece of it. You know, there's the diminishing quality of our education overall, which I think adds to this. But then you have the other piece of how do we handle bullying behavior when it occurs? You know, right now it's very punitive. It is zero tolerance. It is, you know, we're going to suspend you for 10 days regardless of the context. And often the victim is caught up in these policies as well. And what's worse is it doesn't actually address the root problem. These students are taken out of school for X number of days. The more days you're out of school, the less likely you are to graduate. You're losing out on education. These students are being excluded. And it doesn't actually address the root cause of the problem or what started the conflict. So these students are brought back into the school and the cycle starts all over again. And so, you know, some of the approaches that we have been trying with schools are restorative justice approaches, such as if there's conflict between students, you know, rather than immediately sending them to the principal's office, you know, it's a process of bringing all the parties together who have been involved and coming to an agreement on what is a best solution for everybody in this situation. And so that's, you know, empowering the victims who have, you know, been going through this. And it's also building empathy with the perpetrators. And that's the other thing. Bullying, I don't ever call students bullies. I say they're exhibiting bullying behavior, because bullying affects not only the victim, it affects the perpetrator, it affects bystanders, it's the entire school climate. And so, you know, I think it's kind of a combination of all these things. It's a combination of teachers not having the training to recognize it or the ability to step in because they don't know how. And like in Georgia, particularly, this is an issue, because if a teacher does step in when they see a queer student being harassed, you know, then they're sticking their neck out because they could lose their job if they're perceived as, oh, that's the gay teacher. Right. So, I mean, there's a lot of barriers in place to even address this. And when it is being addressed, it's being addressed in such a heavy-handed way that lacks any common sense and is disproportionately impacting our very community. So, you know, I think it's a mixture of all these. I feel like we need to implement restorative justice practices. These have been done in many pilot schools around the country. Clayton County in Georgia is one example where they've been implemented. Their graduation rates are up, their suspension rates are down, and, you know, the harassment in the school is also down. So, you know, these are policies that work. The old ways obviously are just creating more hostile, toxic police environment. Students are being treated like criminals, and of course there's going to be bullying behavior if students are in that sort of environment, you know?
Right. Yeah. So talk a little bit about, you know, it's interesting because I've seen it referred to as two different ways, so you're going to have to help me with the difference, but is there a difference between the Georgia Safe Schools Coalition and the Campaign for Safe Schools, or does one fall into the other? Is it just a simple naming convention? Is there a difference between those two?
Sure, yeah. Let me explain. So I am the field organizer for Georgia Equality, and Georgia Equality is the LGBT political advocacy group. We're a nonprofit. Everything we do is in Georgia. We're local. And we are a coalition member of the Georgia Safe Schools Coalition, which was founded in 2009. This coalition is completely volunteer run. It's run by some phenomenal volunteers, such as Dr. Annalise Singh, who is actually going to be on this program, as well as other community activists, teachers, parents. We have some students involved as well, and so as well as organizations such as Georgia Equality. And so it was kind of a synergy between these two groups that created the Campaign for Safe Schools. It was the Georgia Safe Schools Coalition that started the anti-bullying campaign in Cobb County, where they were able to pass inclusive anti-bullying policies there. And, you know, following that model, Georgia Equality took that victory, and we've been taking it from district to district all around the state. So it really is a synergy. I'm the one who really runs it, and it is a Georgia Equality program. However, the coalition are very close partners with this work, and, you know, it's just very much a collaborative process.
So, I mean, it sounds like the work that y'all are doing is obviously monumentally needed, and you've kind of touched on how some of the policies that you would like to see put in place have worked in other areas. And I guess maybe one of the things that I'd love for you to talk a little bit about is, tell me, look, I know that people that are bullied, it doesn't matter who you are. Bullying is something that is harmful to, like you said, both the victim and the perpetrator and the entire school environment. But how does it specifically, or in what numbers, how is it different, or how does it specifically affect youth that are trans identified or gender variant within some of these schools? Are the numbers higher? Is it a different kind of bullying? Do you find it more or less violent? Like, is there a marked difference between someone who gets bullied for being trans or gender queer and someone that gets bullied for some other reason, even if that's for being LG or B?
Mm-hmm. I will say a lot of the bullying that I see happening is gender-based, and that kind of cuts across all those identities. You know, the bullying is more about you're not being masculine enough, you're not being feminine enough, or you're being too feminine, or you're being too masculine. And so, you know, that does affect, you know, a wide range of folks. Now, for trans individuals specifically, there are additional barriers. Specifically in Georgia, we are having the Georgia High School Association actually passed a ban on trans athletes in the state. It's a weird policy. It says that you have to join the team, the gender team that corresponds with your birth certificate. And the reason they passed this policy was because they were trying to prevent a young boy from joining the gymnastics team, which was an all-girls team. He was not trans. He was just a young boy who wanted to do gymnastics, but they did not want to create a competitive edge. And so they passed this policy, of course, not taking into consideration that essentially you're banning all trans athletes from participating. So, I mean, that's one very concrete example of, like, structural barriers in place. But then also you just have, I mean, gendered spaces in schools, changing rooms, locker rooms, bathrooms. All of those are especially difficult for trans students to navigate, especially if there's not a support system in place in the school, especially if there's not supportive policies that, you know, are going to back them up, especially if the teachers aren't trained or, you know, there's definitely additional barriers there. And as for the bullying, I do see it. However, I also see a lot of resilience. I've actually seen more trans students who have had bullying happen to them, but then use that to create change in their school or to, you know, organize back against that or to just surround themselves with support. So, I mean, I do see it, but I also see a lot of good stuff as well. And that doesn't get talked about enough.
So speaking of that, that's actually a really good point. Do you see an increase? You know, we talked about the increase in bullying that we kind of see in schools. Do you, being kind of on the ground level, do you see an increase in the strength of our Georgia school children? Like, you know, everybody always talks about, like you said, the bullying and the bad things that can happen from it. And I am definitely, absolutely not trying to soften the blow of bullying. But you brought up a point that, you know, you do see some things about resilience. Are you seeing anything about some of these young people being more resilient or stronger than maybe we once saw them to be before they had some of these resources?
I would say so, yes. And I mean, I've only been in Georgia for 5 years, so this is even just in the short time I've been here. Students are getting organized. Students are getting political. Students are, you know, really doing things to change their schools. I think Tumblr has a lot to do with this. I think people educating themselves and finding communities, no matter where they may be. But then also, we've been doing a lot of work to actually create spaces for trans and gender nonconforming youth in Georgia. So we have the GSA Summit. This will be our fifth year doing it this upcoming February. And this is a summit for LGBT students from all across the state to come together to do a day-long free workshops on leadership development, how to form a GSA, how to make your GSA more trans-inclusive, self-care. We had a self-defense class 1 year, HIV testing. And honestly, the most powerful thing about it is for a lot of these students, this is the only time they've been in a space where they're surrounded by people who look like them or who feel like them, who think like them. And, you know, there's all these different pronouns I can use, and it's freedom of expression for the first time. And, you know, I've seen it grow. The first year we had 90 students, second year 150, third 300, last year we had over 400. So wow. This year, you know, it's just growing and growing. And then as well, we have our GSA network that's getting stronger and larger every year. There are these clubs, Gay Straight Alliances or mm-hmm. Queer Straight Alliances. They have a lot of different names. I just use GSA because that's historically right. the most common club name. But these GSAs are popping up all over the state. We're tracking them now, and we're trying to get them connected and give them resources so they can be talking with each other. I know there were three high schools in Gwinnett County that did, I'm not sure all the details, I just know they organized pride events together. Three high schools did this. So there's definitely more support out there. I know a lot of clubs that are trans-led specifically. I feel people coming together. I feel people getting activated. I meet trans youth who are out and proud and doing the hard work, you know, in little towns all over Georgia. And it's just really inspiring, actually. I mean, there's also the pain and some of the despair that comes with it, but there's just tremendous resiliency. And I definitely feel like there's a wave kind of, you know, pushing us this way, because it's not just trans folks we're talking about, right? This issue impacts everyone. And if right. we can all, you know, look at harassment and violence from the way that it affects our communities while understanding, you know, the impacts on everyone, you know, we can definitely solve this problem. Absolutely.
So, you know, it's so funny. I always wonder why I only have one guest on some of my shows. And a lot of times, even 1 hour with one guest is sometimes not enough. And you've given our listeners so many things to kind of think about. One of the things that I would love for you to tell our listeners, if you know of some folks, you know, people want to do this work, especially those of us that have a little bit more experience and aren't in the throes of, I need, you know, support right now, that we can give back. We're at that place in our lives where we can give back. So for those of our mm-hmm. listeners that are in the Atlanta area or in Georgia within a driving distance of Atlanta, what are some ways that either with Georgia Equality or the Georgia Safe Schools Coalition or something like that, what are some ways that they can volunteer and start to help some of our trans young people or just the trans community as a whole kind of grow our resources in our community within some of these things that are already started, right? Because the hardest thing is to start something, but it's what are things that people can do to volunteer if they're yearning to kind of give back?
Mm-hmm. Okay, Eli, I'm going to talk fast because I have a lot of things people can do. So first of all, definitely sign up for our email for georgiaequality.org. Go to there. We send out email blasts, notifications. You'll be up to date on everything that's going on politically. Oftentimes, we need a really fast response when they're trying to pull a fast one and pass really transphobic policies. So sign up for that. Also, I would say we always need volunteers for sure. When you sign up for the email, click on volunteer and you'll get those emails too. I would also say check out the Georgia Safe Schools Coalition website. We have a lot of resources there. If you need help in your school, drop us a line there. If you need legal support in your school, some good groups to contact that have done really good trans legal support are the Southern Poverty Law Center, Lambda Legal, and the ACLU of Georgia. If you want to get involved in some really cool work that's happening here in Metro Atlanta, SNAPCO is a wonderful group that's called Solutions Not Punishments. They work on police harassment against trans and gender nonconforming folks, and they're trying to develop grassroots ways to do pre-booking diversion and, you know, other helpful things. Also, there's the Trans Atlanta Housing Project. This is to help with homeless trans folks to give them get them into stable housing. Someone Cares is another trans group. Okay, I'm just going to start naming some groups that you should check out. I'm not even going to say what they're about. Just check them out. Legender, Transforming, Juxtaposed, Tilt, Just Us ATL, Trans and Friends, Transit. Those are just some good ones to start with. They all do a lot of different things, but there's definitely a lot of activity going on. Also, if bathrooms particularly interest you, Deconstructing Binaries, that's a project I'm also working on. We're trying to get gender neutral and gender inclusive restroom signs all over the state. So
awesome.
Check out all those things. Sorry it was so much at the end. It was great talking.
Yeah, no. So for those of our listeners that were catching that running 9 to nothing, not only can you rewind and listen to it again, but if there's something that you would like to ask Em, you can get in touch with me via the Strong Stance page, and I can get in touch with Em if there's more questions that you have. Em, I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your very busy day. I know that you moved today, so I want to thank you for taking out the time to kind of give back to our community and talk about some of the great work that you're doing. And as a last thing, I always like to give my guests kind of the last word. So if there's something that you want, either that you didn't get to say or the one thing you want people to walk away from this moment with, what would that be?
That if you are going through some hard times right now, if things are looking really hard, just know that you will get through it, that there are people around you who care. I will say go to your counselors, use them. That's what they're there for. If they don't know how to talk about trans issues, get in touch with me and I can find a counselor for you to talk to. I just want to let you know, there are supportive adults all around you, even if you are in a rural area, they are out there. So, you know, don't give up and we're getting through this.
Awesome. Thanks again so much. I really appreciate it. And I'm sure that we will be in touch to work together on some of these great projects in the future. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Absolutely. And so from M, we are going to transition to another guest who, you know, I had mentioned something about one of the hardest things to do is kind of start something and doing something in small towns. This person is also doing that. Our next guest is Liam Mitchum. And Liam is a 23-year-old who has, as a child, faced many adverse situations, including being in foster system and experiencing substance abuse. Despite his young age, though, Liam has fought to find truth and justice in every stage of his life, and by his 21st birthday, he left Georgia to start fresh. He sought out and aligned himself with several nonprofit organizations, including the Gay and Lesbian Community Center in Southern Nevada and Gender Justice Nevada in Las Vegas, where he lived for 18 months. Currently a student at GMC, Liam is a trans man who created and leads his own trans advocacy group in the town where he grew up in Augusta, Georgia. Liam, I want to thank you for coming on and joining us. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. How are you doing tonight, Eli?
I'm doing really well. You know, for those of you that follow me on Facebook, you may have noticed that not long ago, I kind of threw out a call on Facebook and on Twitter and basically said, okay, I'm here. I'm in rural Georgia. Somebody help me. I need some trans community. And a mutual friend of mine and Liam said, you got to talk to my roommate. And we met up for dinner and just an awesome guy. And I, you know, Liam, one of the reasons I wanted you on here was not only because I have already personally benefited from some of the work that you're doing, but you've grabbed something in a very interesting time in Augusta. And I really want to talk about that. But before we get to that, very much in kind of the same vein as some of the questions that I asked, I want to know more about your personal connection to not only queerness in the South, but also versus the time that you spent in Vegas. What was, you know, your connection to who you are in the queer community here in Georgia, as well as the time that you spent in Vegas and back? Like, what did that look like?
I went to Las Vegas for 18 months. I spent a good bit of time there. But before I went to Las Vegas, I had just turned 21, 22 years old. And I was actually identifying as a lesbian. I knew what transgendered was, but I wasn't very educated on the subject. I contributed a lot to my surroundings and people that I chose to be around with. For some reason, like, I had, like, this perception in my mind that being transgendered was, like, this crazy thing, right? Like, I just didn't believe that taking hormones or, actively trying to transition, whatever that means for some people, to me that means, like, taking hormones and then getting surgery and trying to, quote-unquote, pass as a cisgendered male. Like, in my mind, like, these things didn't work. And it wasn't until I left Las Vegas and I got involved with some people out there. I was brand new to town. I didn't really know anybody. I actually ended up going to Vegas on an absolute whim. I needed change in my life, and I needed it fast. So I bought a plane ticket to Las Vegas with a duffel bag and $200 in my pocket, and it was a one-way ticket. I had no way to get home. So I was determined that when I got to Las Vegas, I was going to make it work.
That is called a leap of faith, brother. That is called a leap of faith.
Absolutely a leap of faith. Like, you know, to say the least, right? Like, I think back at it now and I go, oh my goodness, you know, what was I doing? But every single part of my being is so happy that I did that. So I get to Las Vegas, right? And I'm meeting some people and I'm networking through, like, social media. And I find that there is a gay and lesbian community center of Southern Nevada. So of course I'm like, you know, well, this seems like a good start. So let me go get involved there. So I went to this community center and they had, you know, an array of things that they were doing in the community, like community outreach, and they had, like, a support system. The one thing that stood out to me a lot was the transgendered and non-binary support group. And it was called Translation. I didn't really know what I was getting myself into. All I knew is it sounded like a comfortable place to be. So I went, and my first meeting, I remember being very, very nervous and not really knowing what I was doing. And I went and sat in this space, and it was like an open discussion space. And we all started talking, and I got very involved in the group discussion. And I realized, like, you know, as time went on in that space, in that moment, that I had walked through the door, you know, of that space for a reason. And it was the reason because, you know, I wasn't indeed trans. And, you know, like, I might have been scared. I think growing up in the South, like, being gay or being a lesbian was, you know, very taboo and something that you didn't do. And, you know, like, I remember, you know, being very involved in the gay and lesbian community or in Augusta, Georgia. And I know, like, being out in public when I wasn't in that space, like, being gay or lesbian was, you know, very, like, looked down upon. It's you know, it's the Bible Belt here, you know, and it's a very conservative place to be. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't want to, like, push my limitations anymore and say, oh, now I'm trans and be uneducated in that department. And I didn't want to be considered to be any more taboo than I already was. And so I got to Las Vegas and I'm in this group and I realized that, like, you know, this is who I am and this is how I'm identifying and this is how I need to start identifying because this is what makes me comfortable. So I had a partner at the time and I remember going home from that meeting and saying to my partner, you know, hey, like, you know, this sounds kind of crazy, but I went to this group and I think that, you know, identify as being trans and that was my coming out experience. And so I continued going back to this group every Friday. It was every Friday at 5:30. And come 5:30 on Friday, I was in the seat. Like it never failed. I think I might've missed like three meetings in a matter of a year. And when I did miss a meeting, I was very upset. Yeah, I was, right? Like, and I remember being in my first meeting and thinking to myself, like, you know, like, this is a cool thing to do. Like, I enjoy being in a space where I feel safe and where, you know, I'm having, you know, my pronouns correct. And then, like, but I didn't really carry the weight of that. It wasn't until about 18 months later when I was getting ready to leave Las Vegas and come back to Augusta, Georgia, that I realized what I had. And so, you know, my connection to the queer community here and in Las Vegas are two very different things. But, you know, now that I'm back from Las Vegas and, you know, I learned so much, I was involved in so many, like, outreach, like, things and, like, two nonprofits. And, you know, like, I remember I was working with a nonprofit. I stutter sometimes, so you're going to bear with me. And I always stutter when I say this. Gender Justice Nevada. I was working with some people from that nonprofit, and I remember having a meeting with somebody from the office of Senator Harry Reid, and it was like a very opening experience for me. And I was like, wow, Lee, I'm like, you know, like, you're not a college student. Like, you just got sober. Like, you don't really know what you're doing, but you're out and you're in the world, and you're putting one foot in front of the other, and you're making it happen. And I realized that it didn't take a whole lot for me to get out in the community and make a difference. So I came up to Augusta, Georgia, and I brought that experience back with me. And that's actually how I got involved in the trans community here in Augusta, Georgia.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about, you know, you said that you were originally from Augusta. Now, I know that, like you said, you weren't really involved necessarily in the trans community, but you were involved in, you know, the queer community within Augusta. What was the difference then and now, you know, from the time that you left to go to Vegas and now coming back? What's the community? Has it changed much? Has it gotten bigger? Is there more or less resources? Or during the 18 months when you were gone, did it pretty much stay the same?
You know, that's almost kind of a hard question for me to answer. I know, like, there were zero resources in Augusta, Georgia before I left to go to Las Vegas. I think we had two or three gay bars and clubs that, like, everyone that was out came to these clubs and bars, but that was all, like, the community space that we had was to go to the bar or the club. And, you know, and I think that was kind of rough on our community as a whole. You know, and again, like, you know, I was young, dumb, and I was doing some questionable things, and I wasn't really trying to be involved in the community as much. So when I left Las Vegas, like, I kind of made it like a cut and dry, like, disconnection. Like, I left and I left it at that. But I can say that I did keep in contact with a few folks here in Augusta, Georgia. And one thing that I can say that I think happened was, I think that the need for the community space, like, the need for the community to come together as a whole expanded a whole lot. Right. I know that Pride in Augusta, Georgia is only a few years old. I can't tell you exactly how many years old, but I think, like, in the ballpark of five. And, you know, that isn't very old at all. And I know when I was in Las Vegas and I was working, like, as a trans advocate, and I was going out in the streets and I was doing my best to, like, make changes in policies and school systems and legislation, stuff of that nature. I was reaching back to some friends back at home, and I realized that there was a very, very, very small trans community in Augusta, Georgia, at least to my knowledge at the time. And, you know, I thought to myself, you know, I was speaking to a very dear friend of mine, somebody that's still very close to me. And one day they said something, and I don't know to this day if they know that they said this, and I heard it, but I did. And they said, someone said, you know, this person just doesn't know any trans folks. And my friend said, you know, I doubt that that's true. You just have never come in contact with them. Like, you just don't know how to get involved, or, like, you don't know that they're trans. Like, there's no space for them to be. So it's kind of hard to, like, target that demographic. And that hit home for me, like, really, really big. I was like, wow, like, I never thought about it that way. So, you know, like, I realized, like, when I was planning my trip back home to Augusta, Georgia, I realized right then in that second that I was very, very scared to leave my queer and non-binary and gender variant trans space, you know. And I was like, you know, I don't know how to go home to the rural South and not have these things. So I knew of two people that identified with being transgendered, and I reached out to them. Didn't even know if they were transgendered. That's just what I heard around. You know, that was an awkward, you know, conversation to have. But I reached out, and, you know, and next thing you know, like, I've got 10, 15, 20, 25 people that are like coming out of nowhere, like coming out of the woodwork saying, I'm transgendered and this is what's happening. And, you know, and you said a minute ago, you reached out at a very interesting time in your city. And you're very right because, you know, like I said, like before I went to Vegas, the trans community was always almost like obsolete, right? Like it just didn't exist. And now that I'm back and I've reached out, it's like I'm finding a person that is trans identified or gender non-variant identified almost on a daily basis. And it's like, where did people before, you know? And it's crazy to think
well,
of.
And
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that I think that it's interesting because also another thing that you kind of have to remember is that, like you said, that your friend said, if you don't know where to look for them, if you're not part of that community, it can be kind of hard to reach out. Now, the very interesting thing that you did, which opened yourself up to meeting these trans and gender variant people every day, is you started Wake Up Augusta, this group. And I'd love for you to tell some of our listeners kind of why you started it, how long ago you started it. You know, what you kind of see is what is this group to you? What is it giving to you? What do you want it to give to the community?
Okay, so I think we should start at the very base of this. So I decided that I couldn't come back home to Augusta, Georgia, without having some kind of safe space. So I took it upon myself to go ahead and say, okay, well, I'm going to create this space for the community. If no one comes, I'll be there in my own safe space. And I remember I was laying in bed one night eating Girl Scout cookies and watching Netflix.
Nice.
I was watching a documentary called Black Power Mixtape. And they said something in this documentary, and someone said, wake up and never sleep again. And that hit me like, you know, like a ton of bricks. And I said, oh my goodness, you know, this is going to be like my group and what I'm going to call it. So I reached out to people in the community and I said, okay, I'm going to create a trans and non-binary community support system, like a community support group. Like, so we can all come and meet together every, like weekly to come be in a safe space. So I created the group Wake Up. That's our name. We started, I think, around August or September of 2014. We're only like 3 or 4 months old. We're not very old at all. I haven't been home for very long, so I hope that it blossoms into more. But
right.
To me, the space is it's a safe space. I remember leaving my last meeting, my last trans meeting in Las Vegas, and I remember like breaking down and crying right in space, right? Like I was like, oh my goodness, and I broke down into absolute tears, and I was so vulnerable, and I realized like that if people, like if myself, if I'm feeling this way about my safe space, like what would it mean to the community back home to have that kind of space? Like people might not know that this space exists, or what if folks know that this doesn't exist because they're from somewhere else, and then there's nowhere to have that space in Augusta. So to me, that space is a safe space. It's a community support group. It's where like we can meet friends. It's a social networking type deal. Like I also want it to be like an advocacy and like educational space. Like every group meeting, I try to touch on one topic a week, and it's usually always a different topic. There are things from like what does it mean to be transgender to you, or where does the T fall in LGBT? QIA,
right.
You know, and how do we own that space? And I think, to me, the space is that. But to everybody else, I hope that to them, if it's nothing else, it's just a space where they can come be safe, even if it is, you know, for an hour or two every week.
Yeah, and you know, that's actually an interesting note, is that, you know, most of the groups that I've been involved in, they meet once a month. You know, the group that I was involved in D.C., we met once a month. A lot of other groups that I know of meet once a month. But Wake Up Augusta meets once a week, right? It's Wednesday night, and it's for about an hour to an hour and a half, although sometimes I know you kind of spill into 2 hours. And I think that what was interesting the one time that I've been is that it was also, you know, a pretty good mix of people. Granted, it's much more on the younger scale. I think that I might have been one of the oldest, you know, members in the room in my early 30s, but I thought that it was great, the mix of people as far as trans men and trans women, which is another space that is that I kind of really crave, is to be able to connect with people of all different, whether you subscribe to the binary or not, if you identify as male or female, and sometimes in larger cities, when there's more resources, things start to split up into, well, there's this group of trans men that welcome trans women, and there's this group of trans women that welcome trans men, but the subjects that we tackle are very one side or the other, whereas, you know, Wake Up is very trans in general, which I think can be very beneficial. And I don't, when you're in a smaller community, it's very difficult to split your membership when you have
a few people
that are willing to come out. So tell me between this and what you've kind of created, because I know that right now this is kind of your baby, and I know that there is one other group that meets once a month in Augusta. What, in your opinion, what does this increase in resources mean for the trans community here in the CSRA or the, you know, this rural area of Georgia?
You know, to me, it actually means a lot. I have to say that since I have been actively involved in the community when it comes to trans and non-variant issues is we've gotten these resources, right? Like, I started my group. I know that there is another group that is for transgendered folks and non-variant individuals as well. And I know they meet once a month. I've never been to one of their meetings, so I couldn't tell you a whole lot about that. But I also know that a few weeks ago, so we are in a medical district here in Augusta, Georgia. We have tons of medical colleges here. We have, like, you know, an abundant amount of hospitals. So the Medical College of Georgia here, it's called Georgia Regents University. They actually just opened up a free health clinic that is open twice a month that is targeted towards the LGBTQ community. And this is where you can go and you can go get free medical care. It's any general medicine, and they also target it towards the transgender community. So you can go there and you can go get free hormones. Like, you pay for your prescription, obviously, but, you know, it costs you nothing to walk into the door and say, hey, this is what I'm going through. This is what I need. And I can tell you that since this equality clinic has opened, I have seen the trans community absolutely blossom in Augusta, Georgia. And it makes me question, like, you know, and this is a hard question for me to answer as well. It's like, is it because, you know, now all of a sudden we have the space where we can go get our hormone therapy that people are now all of a sudden going, hey, you know, actually I might be trans and maybe I should think about this because this is actually a realistic thing for me. Like, before, it wasn't something that was easily accessible, so I didn't really put much time and effort into that. Or is it, you know, basically kind of like, the light in the tunnel, like, oh my goodness, like, I've been feeling this way for a very long time. Now I have this clinic that I can go to, and now people are coming out of the woodwork to come into this. So I can tell you that, you know, from my personal experiences with the clinic and from both of the trans spaces that are provided here in Augusta by community members, it has done absolute wonders for the community here. I think I know a lot of folks have come to me and thanked me a whole lot for having the space because they feel like now all of a sudden they can truly be themselves. And, you know, I think the upgraded resources here in Augusta means a whole lot. And I hope that it means a whole lot for other folks as well, right? Like, it's not just Augusta. Like, if you're from Augusta, you understand that Augusta is the CSRA. Like, we are Aiken, South Carolina. We are North Augusta, South Carolina. We are Augusta, Georgia. We are Evans, Georgia. We are, you know, we are Thompson, Georgia, Washington, Georgia. Like, we are Savannah. We are Charleston. We are, you know, Hilton Head. Like, we are all of these things, right? And, like, people are coming. Like, I know I had one person contact me from Savannah, Georgia, and was like, hey, like, I heard that, you know, this is happening in Augusta, and I'm interested in coming. And I hope that, you know, this clinic provides so much more for not just people that are in the Augusta, in the city of Augusta, but in the general area as a whole, you know. And
yeah, absolutely. For those of our listeners that are not familiar, because I was not before I moved here, CSRA actually stands for Central Savannah River Area, and it does encompass a number of cities and small towns, most of which Liam just named, both on the Georgia side of the state line as well as the South Carolina side of the state line. And the small town that I moved to, Washington, which is an hour outside of Augusta, also falls within the CSRA. Liam, you know, you've given a lot of our listeners some great information, and I want to thank you for kind of joining us. One of the things I would like from you is if you could tell folks either how to get in touch with Wake Up, your group, as well as information on how to get in touch with the health clinic, so that folks can kind of tune into those. And if we've got listeners that are driving distance, can show up to your meetings or go to that health clinic and get those medical services, particularly for those folks that don't have health insurance or can't afford to do this on their own.
Okay. So my meeting space, we meet every single Wednesday of the month from 7:30 to 9 p.m. We meet at a little coffee cafe on Broad Street in Augusta, Georgia. I do believe that our address is 936 Broad Street. Our cafe is New Moon Cafe. So if anyone wants to come, please feel free to come. We also do have an open door policy when it comes to the, bringing your partners or your support systems, your family, your friends. We just ask that, you know, that you use like personal discretion and picking on who you bring, because this is indeed a safe space. But we are all about having people come that are willing to support you in being in a safe space. So if you wanted to contact me, we do indeed have a Facebook. It is Wake Up Augusta. It's on Facebook. You could also contact me through my own personal Facebook. That would probably be the easiest thing to do, since I'm still trying to learn how to navigate through my own Wake Up group Facebook. It's still like a very new process to me. But if you wanted to contact me, you could contact me at Liam Mitchum at Facebook. You could also, I guess, maybe contact you, Eli, and maybe you could get the information to me as well. And the Equality Clinic, now, I do have a hard time speaking for that because I'm not 100% clear on what I'm about to say, so don't quote me, but I do believe that the website is GRU Equality, that they do have a Facebook. It's the GRU Equality Medical and Health Educational Organization, and I know that they do have a website. I think it's the EqualityClinicAugusta.com. I believe that's it. But again, if anybody wants to contact me, please feel free to do so. I can get that information. I do know that Wake Up is also advertised on the Equality Clinic's website. So if you find one or the other, if you get to me, I can help you get to them. If you get to them, they can help you get to me. So, you know, it's not very hard to contact me. I also wouldn't mind giving my number out. I'm not going to do it right here on this podcast, but if somebody wanted to contact Eli, I am more than welcome for Eli to give whomever contacts me my email or my phone number, and you can contact me directly through my own personal line as well.
Well, Liam, I appreciate it, and I will make sure that if any of our listeners do contact me, either via the Strong Stance Facebook page or via my personal Facebook page, or as I've mentioned several times, you can find any of my social media or even send me an email through my About Me page, which is about.me/STRON003. Get in touch with me. I can put you in touch with either M or Liam, depending on where you live, what kind of things you're wanting to do. Liam, you know, just like with M, I want to give you a chance to, if there was one thing that you didn't say or one thing that you want people to kind of walk away from tonight with, what would that be?
Well, I think being as educated as possible on who you are and your community is very beneficial to us. I think that we do face a lot of oppression, and it's not, you know, it's not just, how do I say this in a way that I want to say it? So our community as a whole, the trans community or people, you know, that are non-binary, we face oppression. But I think, you know, people of color, especially trans women of color, face a whole lot of oppression. And we need to be educated on these things, because as a community, it's, you know, it's up to us to make a change, right? Like, it's up to us to educate the masses. It's up to us to get, you know, our wants and our needs out there, and make people understand, you know, why we are not second-class citizens and why we shouldn't be treated as a minority. So I think being very educated on, like, policies and, you know, the laws in your area and, like, you know, like, even things like, you know, language and using, you know, language that is not abusive or offensive to other people helps get our point across a lot as well. So I think if anything I can say to anybody is just, you know, like, be an active part of your community. Understand that, you know, like, I'm from a small town. I am in my first semester of college. I'm just now trying to get my life on track, and, you know, and I'm putting myself out there and trying to be somebody from my community. And, you know, anybody that wants to get involved can do it. You know, just find the right resources, get yourself educated, get linked up with the right people, and just start pushing forward. And everything, like, if you build it, they will come. Just, you know, that gets me through every single day. So I think that's what I would want to say is, you know, make sure that we're standing up for one another and for ourselves. And, you know, we understand where our oppression comes from, and understanding what we need to do to fix that.
Well, so Liam, thank you very much. I really appreciate that. And, you know, I want to thank both of our guests tonight. Liam, thank you for taking the time out tonight to kind of share about Wake Up Augusta and to share about this new health clinic. I really appreciate it. And thanks for, you know, just taking the time out to come and talk about some of your experience and kind of where you're hoping to see things go.
No, you know, Eli, I really appreciate you having me, you know, and I'm going to go ahead and apologize to those folks that I do tend to stutter and mumble a little bit, and I am kind of nervous right now, so I might not say things as clearly as I would have liked to, but I hope that people understand that I do have good intentions, and, you know, again, I really appreciate you having me on your show. It means the world to me.
Absolutely. So I want to, again, thank both of our guests tonight. You know, this is a subject that's important. You know, there are a lot of people that don't live in the big cities where there are all of these resources. And just because you're one doesn't mean that you can't create something great or be involved in something that's already gotten started. You know, it's very important to get involved. It's very important to feel, you know, like what you're doing is soothing your soul and your inner being. And if you're not the type of person to get involved, that's okay. You just have to do what makes you feel happy and what gives you peace every day and what maybe makes you feel a little bit more comfortable in your skin every day. Now, you know, I just as part of a wrap up, I want to say that we did just have the Transgender Day of Remembrance. I, you know, like many people, did think of all of those people whose lives were ended senselessly by violence towards the trans community. And it's a day that can really mean so many things to so many people. But what I want for all of us to remember is that TDOR is one day, but the work that we have to eliminate the need for that one day has to happen all year round. So if you are the type of person to get out there and make those changes, please do. Don't just remember the trans community on this one day of November 20th when we honor those folks that have died, which most are trans women of color, and most are trans women in general as well. And this is a very important thing. Don't just remember these people after it's too late. Work to end these deaths before they happen. And I want to thank everybody for joining us, and I want to wish everyone a happy Thanksgiving. And my personal piece of thanks is that I am thankful every day for our guests, for our listeners, for this space on air to be able to talk about the things that matter. Of course, I am very thankful to one Miss Anise Mabry, AKA Doc, for starting this network for these important issues. Please reach out if you need to. There is a brand new helpline called translifeline.org. It's for trans people. If you need to talk to someone, please reach out. We're always here to help. Again, I want to thank everyone for joining us. I want to thank our guests for being here, and we will see you again next month with another wonderful show topic for you. Have a wonderful night, and take care of each other.